Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Reasoning with an Optimist podcast for the week of May 15th, 2016. This is Jack Bressett Mills. Conversation today with Nathan, a second Nathan, one you haven't heard before. But first, the verses I wrote for Rudolf Steiner's Calendar of the Soul for his week 7. This one I wrote 2 years ago. Verse 7. The powerful light of spring is pulling me out of myself. My thinking, on its own, is not strong enough to keep me balanced in this beauty. I need my heart, my intuition, to guide me. And this one I wrote last year for the same Rudolf Steiner verse. Verse 7a. The world is too beautiful now for my normal mind. I cannot think my way through, and would be lost in light, but for a skill I have felt, one that comes swifter, truer than thought, intuition. Yeah, Nathan and I, we talked maybe 5 years ago, and not since then, I don't think. This was really good to reconnect with him. I thank this podcast for that, and I thank you, Nathan, for talking. Here you go. Hey.
Hi, this is Nathan's voicemail. I cannot come to the phone right now, and I'm fixing my lawnmower.
I love this.
If you could leave me a message, I will get back to
you. I love that message.
If I can. Thanks for calling. Hello?
Hey, that's you. Nathan, hi.
Hey, there it is.
I'm happy that
I wouldn't pick it up.
I'm happy that I recorded your marvelous voicemail with your brother as the lawnmower.
Oh gosh. Really?
That's very nice.
Oh, that's great.
I've always liked that.
Yeah, people have been after me to change that for years, but
no, don't do it.
Something in me that says, no, hang on to that for a while.
Ian and I were talking about identity.
And ooh.
Just now, before I talked to you, I thought I would break the norm. I would ask a question. And, I mean, would you ever call yourself the actor? Would you say that you are the actor? Or, like, a doctor would probably say, I'm a doctor.
But, sure.
And a teacher might say, I'm a teacher. But very, I mean, I would never really want to say that I'm a piano tuner.
Yeah,
I might say I'm a teacher. There are some professions that you'd be totally happy to say I am the profession. You know what I mean?
Right, and just have done with it.
Yep,
that is what I am.
Because
right.
It's all encompassing. Being a doctor, I don't think you can ever say I'm off duty. You're always a doctor.
Right, right. Well, I love that question. It's something I've definitely thought about a lot. I wouldn't feel comfortable just calling myself the actor. I'd say I'm a creator of sorts. The thing I've noticed about myself that I like the most is making something brand new, making something out of nothing, and that's what interests me most. So I'd say I'm a creator rather than an actor.
Wonderful. And the feeling of artist, I've always tried to feel I was an artist. So you can never really say that you are, and I don't want you to say you are either, but feeling that you can have about yourself that's a very powerful, empowering feeling.
Yeah.
And it can be in walking. I can feel the artist as I walk to my to my mailbox, and no one can tell me I'm not. An artist is free to say, you don't understand. You don't understand my art.
Yeah. Yes, no, absolutely. It's more, you know, the art is something you follow, you sort of, you know, lovingly chase after, and you never quite have it, you know, you've never caught it.
Yeah.
You're just reaching for it, the joy in reaching for it is
very
sort
nice.
Of what keeps you going, I found anyway.
Very nice. And I always try to avoid any thing I make, calling what I make art, because that is so open to public ridicule.
Yeah.
Rather, the act itself of making the thing, I can call that an art, and I can I can fail. I can totally fail at the outcome, but I can I can still be the artist in trying it and trying to do it.
Absolutely, the artist is in the working. Yeah, it is in the power of doing, as another one of my old teachers used to say, power of doing.
Nice.
Just stuck with me for a long time.
So do you have, maybe you have to stop a moment and look, but maybe you aren't that way. Maybe you already have a big thought, a thought that maybe it's so big you don't even notice it because it's you. That thought might be you.
Yeah,
you know
yeah.
what I mean? There's some, everyone I think has these huge thoughts within them that maybe they poo-poo them because they think, well, that's just me. But really, if you look at it, it's totally unique.
And yeah.
But it's also universal that anyone would appreciate hearing it. Have you thought of such a large thought? I don't know if I'm putting you on the spot.
Oh, absolutely. I
good.
Love that
good.
Thought.
Good, good.
It's one that Sophia and I talk about almost daily.
We
sort of are talking about that, and it's something that we both sort of tripped upon actually in the pursuit of our acting training and trying to chisel away at, okay, so what, let me get clearer on this. What are we actually trying to do? Like, you sort of have to continuously redefine that for yourself. And you're just getting a little closer maybe.
Oh,
or maybe not, but at least you're chipping away.
That's the best thing.
We talked about how what we noticed when we saw what we considered the best acting, you know, the most truthful, I suppose, acting, the one that yelled at us a little louder.
Yeah.
We noticed that the person, the actor, if we knew them, they were simply getting a little bit closer to what they would call their own unique self. And it wasn't about putting something else on. It was about letting the extraneous stuff go to get to sort of the core of the person, sort of that uniqueness. And so we both realized, wow, the best thing you can do as not just an actor, and not just an artist, but as perhaps a human,
yes,
is that process of letting go the things that you've sort of built up, you know, throughout the course of living your life and sort of maybe just refining to that unique part of yourself. Because you're right. If you're honoring that, I mean, really truly honoring that little voice inside that you know is you, nobody's gonna argue with that. That's just you. I mean, people might not enjoy you for being you, but they won't be able to say, oh, you're not you. I don't believe that, you know.
I don't know how much eurythmy you've watched. I've watched quite a bit, my wife being a eurythmist.
Mm.
And sometimes I can see a eurythmist who, instead of seeing the music or seeing the speech, they are seeing how we are seeing them somehow.
Yeah.
And there's this, I don't know if it's Venus, the gesture for Venus. There's this beautiful gesture. I don't know if you ever did the planetary eurythmy.
Yes, I did, yes.
And Venus has this hand out, and it's in a way, you can imagine a beautiful person looking in their hand as though it's a mirror.
It's just a mirror, and the other hand is out back behind and spinning, sort of.
And in a way, I've seen people on stage that are, they would have been great, except that they're picturing how they look. And so they're almost there, they're acting very well, but they're not completely shutting us off. I think the greatest actors can be an actor and not an actor at the very same time. It's a really paradoxical situation.
It truly is. That's the most difficult thing, is because you would like it to just be one thing that you have to do.
Oh, yeah.
But you really are having to do many, many, many things simultaneously and giving them all their own weight. You know, you can't just focus on, you know, what is the image of myself that I'm portraying right now? Because that's, you know, you're already out of it. It's more about letting go and accepting yourself as what you are in that moment and not judging it, letting it be what it is.
Is it possible to look at De Niro or Meryl Streep and really try to get something from them, or is it totally useless because they are doing themselves in a way?
They are, and that's really been the trend in especially on camera acting in the 20th century, late 20th century apparently, the only thing that matters is if you are, you know, photorealistic, you know, a realistic depiction of life as we see it. That seems to be the most important thing in acting. But that being said, there's the very reason that's what's in vogue right now, that there is something to it. I don't know if it's the whole picture, but that sense of truth that you get from Meryl Streep, I think, is extremely valuable. I completely revere her work. And she's also somebody, I think, sort of a litmus test for me as whether or not I'm impressed by an actor, is if they can do, you know, some really beautiful, beautiful work on camera and then turn right around and do some really, really beautiful work on the stage. Huh. You know, if they can wield the words of Shakespeare like a sword and also go and do some chick flick and be the best thing you've ever seen in a chick flick, yes, Meryl Streep, I think, sort of takes the cake for that. She's impressive because she's fearless, seemingly. She's not scared of taking on projects for what their reputation might be. She decides, you know, I'm going to find my own way inside this cliche, or, you know, she's all about surprising. You never quite know what the approach she's going to take is going to be. You just know it's going to be impressive and something to watch.
Maybe that's the lesson, then, to see the fearlessness. I was trying to imagine, can you learn anything from a great actor? You can, in a way, if I look at a great pianist, I don't learn a thing. I just go, man, I'll never be good. I'll never be any good. And so with a great actor, can you really learn something from them? I guess the fierceness, you can learn to be fierce in a way, in a inner way. Yeah.
Yeah, I think you can learn... I think you can learn things that come from, it's not like learning a lesson, you know, it's not like, it's never something you can really go and jot down in your notebook and say, oh, remember this phrase, that's the key right there. It comes from, if you have the opportunity to watch them many times and to see them inside different roles and how they treat those different roles. And that way you can sort of get more of an impression of how an actor might approach a thing or play a thing. But yeah, it's never anything I've found that I can sort of distill in a satisfying way, like in words somehow.
How close you've come to this idea, the greatest actor is the greatest actor, someone who loses themselves somehow. They don't have a self of their own. Or is the greatest actor the most rock solid personality at the base? They know who they are. Do you have a clue? Is it both? Is it neither?
I think that there are great actors in both camps. Huh. And they're great for different reasons. Usually I find that the actors who are more loose with their own identity, that seem to have less identity, those naturally translate really, really well to the camera. A teacher I had once said, you don't have to be intelligent to be a good actor. That is particularly true for film, because a lot of it is, if there's any artifice, if there's any craft to it at all, any conscious craft anyway, it's going to show up on the camera. Immediately you'll see it, and it'll read false to you. But if you're not thinking about that, if you're just sort of blundering along blindly without any third eye, and you're just sort of going by blind instinct, that reads beautifully on the camera. And so people who are, you know, less tethered to their center can just sort of float around on camera from character to character, and it will read great every single time. Whereas the actor who is, you know, firm in himself and has studied himself and characters and all these things, and has that, I hate to say intellectual approach, because it's not what it is. It shouldn't be that. Right. But, you know, a more conscious approach to it. And they make their purpose to be close to them, to themselves at the core. Those seem to be the ones who gravitate more to the stage.
Like the people who...
I find myself more in.
Good. The people who, they enter a character and they don't leave it the entire time of the project. They, all night long, all day long, on the way to and from the soundstage, they are the character. You wonder, are those people more themselves? Are they in control of their personality? Or are they trying desperately to not be themselves? Are they trying to be, I think they are trying to be the other person. Yeah.
Like a Daniel Day-Lewis or somebody who's the method actor, the idea of the method actor. Yeah, I was very, very interested in that sort of kind of person for a really, really long time. I kind of wanted to be like that for a long time. I realized eventually that, of course, I couldn't. And those people have been that kind of person since birth. They came out and they had that looseness to them. I don't, and that's fine. That gives me other tools. But you can have that sort of personality and have it be a personality, have it be, a you. But I do think those people are fascinated first and foremost with being the other character, with actually living as them, taking their skin on. And I think that's what Daniel Day-Lewis does. Once again, I think that is great on camera. I think that reads... I think it's sort of a good tool for on camera, especially since, you don't get to shoot the story in order at all. You don't go from scene one to the end. You sort of start in the middle and you do the same two pages for 8 hours and you stop and it becomes this whole other thing. So if you have a method that allows you to just stay in character all day long, then that doesn't hurt you anymore that you're not shooting it in order because you're just the character.
Yeah.
But if, you want to approach it as, oh, I'm going to live the life of this person tonight. I'm going to step in and just sort of go all the way through a huge story arc, and you have to sort of prepare yourself for that and not just mannerisms, not just, what does it feel to pick up a pencil like this person? Just you have the entire life of a person to worry about. Then I feel like it might not serve. I haven't worked with too many actors like that in theater.
I mean, those people can't have a personal life. They can't have a partner, I don't think.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I mean, if they do, then that partner is probably similar to them enough to where they give each other the benefit of the doubt. Daniel Day-Lewis is married and has been for...
Amazing.
For a good long time, but his wife, I've heard stories about his wife, and that, I mean, she's an actor as well, so she, I guess part of her gets it.
Yeah.
Maybe she's just made peace with it. I don't know. I think it would be impossible to live with.
My goodness.
Yeah.
My goodness. As far as big thoughts, so is the thought, when I asked you this question, you gave me this answer, we fell back into acting. Is the big thought outside of acting, or is it really, that is... I mean, you are the actor so much that is, you want the big thought to be about acting. You want to understand yourself. I am so impressed by people who really are the actor. I don't want to belittle it at all. And I think you and I have talked about this. Carlos Castaneda wrote these books about these spiritual paths in Mexico and South America, and there were two paths to the spirit. One is through dreaming, which is a very private activity, but one is through stalking, it was called. But it's really acting, that you be other people all the time through your gait and through your clothing. And that's a very high state. And so I don't mean to belittle it, but is that really what you were trying to say with the big thought, that you and your partner are picturing acting, better acting?
Well, yes. I'd say the big thought comes through the machine of, sort of identity loosely based on acting and theater as a world.
Yes.
It's funneled through that simply because that's what I've found ignites my doing the best.
Nice.
It's the thing that puts me into action. When I have the big thought of... whatever the big thought is that day, I funnel it through the machine of, I am an actor somehow. I am a creator. I am a theater maker, so that I can then go and do something about it.
Yeah.
And it's the way that I feel I can bring the largest part of myself to the table.
Yes.
When wrestling with a big thought, and whatever the big thought might be. Yeah, they're inseparable for me.
Wonderful.
There is no one without the other, sort of.
I am so happy that there are so many ways, capital W, ways that people can find. I fell into Kyudo archery last year. That's a complete way. You can do everything with archery and acting and with beekeeping. I find that I can become an initiate in the highest level just by being a beekeeper.
And absolutely.
So, and it's so beautiful that we can just fall into so many dozens of possible futures and possible paths.
Oh, I know. It's so funny you say that. I was just talking to Sophia yesterday. I said to her, Sophia, I think I'm going to start painting. I feel like I want to try out yet another little, you know, way of accessing that part of myself and working on it and with, you know, with a different eye, with a different perspective. But yeah, I'm always hungry for new ways. And like you said earlier, you know, you just walking can ignite the artist, and it really it hooks it right on.
Maybe the feeling has to be there first. Maybe, I forget, you know, when I'm going down the hall, do I think before I go down the hall, I am the artist? No, I think I actually have to start going down the hall. Then as I'm going, maybe I've developed the habit of being an artist. Maybe it's a habit that I form. And so that whatever I'm doing, if I look at my dirty desk, I can just say, oh, the artist, you know, my dirty desk. That's the artist in me.
That solves that problem. the artist, that's what it looks like.
That's right. So maybe it's just a building of correct habits.
Yeah. And a lot of it certainly is. And I think it's funny because you work really hard in training and stuff to make all these habits, to, you know, to really ingrain them. And inevitably, 5 years after, you realize that those are the only things holding you back. And you realize you have to break all of those habits and consciously form some new ones.
Nice.
You'll have to break all of those in the next 5 years because they just won't be serving you anymore. They won't be giving anything else to your work because you've absorbed them all.
Very cool.
So it is sort of frustrating, but that's something, the first thing you have to probably get really comfortable with if you say, ooh, I'm going to be somehow involved in art in my life. You have to get really comfortable with the fact that you're never going to, you know, perfect it or whatever. Yeah.
We had a little group at our house for years, and once a month we'd have Paradox Thursday. And we would be required to come with the paradox. And we wouldn't even have to, we would not have to actually come with the paradox. We only would come with a truth. So any truth we'd come with, love is all you need. You know, you come with some truth. And then the other people in the group would completely decimate your idea by showing you the opposite is actually true.
Oh, my goodness.
We realize that every truth is a truth if it's a paradox. The truth is a paradox at its core. And it's really impossible to find one that isn't a duplicity at the same time. It's a binary thing. At least a binary. So what you just said about the habits, I hadn't thought of that, but that's another one. That's wonderful.
Yeah, well, yeah, and at least binary, I think that's key, because, I mean, there can be so many, depending on what the truth is. I think about that a lot as well. And that was one of the first, I guess, big thoughts I had was when I was, I guess, in middle school, that somehow, like, because I was raised as, you know, a Christian, and I remember having the thought one day, oh, but there's this other religion called Judaism, and they say things are different, and somehow they think they're just as right as I think I am in my beliefs.
Yeah.
How can this be? If they believe it just as strongly as I do, then who's to say which one of us is right? And then, you know, that opened up a whole... That's sort of like the first big one that sort of starts you scrutinizing everything.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, okay, is that a truth or is that yet another paradox?
Yeah. And then when you're single, you think how free you are, but then you're lonely and it's a very unfree situation. Then you find someone and you realize how free you are by having someone, and then it's both. It's always both. But it can, I think, depending on our focus, we go in the direction that we choose in the thing, which sets our mood then for the rest of our life, that I am free. I've created a relationship where I am actually free within the relationship.
Yes.
Anyway, it takes work.
No, and it is. That's the greatest thing that I've ever stumbled upon. I never looked for that. I never really knew that that was a thing that I could get, but you know,
yeah.
When you stumble upon it,
yeah,
it's
this is amazing. This is amazing. Yeah, beautiful. Well, thank you for talking. I don't know if you have anything else to say. I had a wonderful time with you.
Me too. Oh my gosh, it was so good to talk to you again.
I remember this great talk we had about suicide years ago. I was saying how marvelous it would be for someone as beautiful and as talented as you to commit suicide. I was hoping that it would make you feel ridiculous about it, that you would never do it. But
it was
fun to feel that, you know, that society would really, I mean, if you really think there are repeated lives and that, you know, we'd come back again, it's okay to talk that way, but.
Yeah, of course. No, and that was a bedrock supposition in that conversation.
Yeah.
And since that conversation, it has been a rather arduous road to where I am now.
Yeah.
I think most of my decisions that I was making back then were in some way driven by fear. And recently I've been trying to flip the switch and make decisions based on, you know, courage, something a little better, a little higher, I think.
Yeah. You've heard about this.
And so far it's been working lovely.
You've heard about this 27 Club or something like that, where the apparently 28, I remember it, 28 is so old that people can't do it. They cannot do it. And around 27
is the last.
They can't do it any farther than 27 somehow. They can't make it any farther than that. And many, 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 many famous people have not made it past 27. I think maybe because they're famous before that, they're young and famous. You know,
they've been famous for 10 years already, and they've just
burned
a little too bright.
So hard.
It is. Yeah, that's right where I am right now.
Yeah.
27 for the next 2 months.
Yeah, does it feel like a big, big thing? Like, oh my God.
It has been in the back of my mind all year, for sure.
Yeah.
At the same time, it's been a very healthy feeling year. I don't feel like I've been sucked down the path of ego too badly.
Yeah.
To the point where I have to just, you know, end myself.
Yeah.
That's not quite ever been on my radar, that extreme of it. But I've found 26 and 27 sort of a more zestful life, I think. It's doing well, and it helps living in a brand new place that I've never been, and you know, meeting brand new people and stuff like that, which was in itself just sort of like a big leap of faith for me. I had no idea how that was going to translate.
I think I must have mentioned when we talked the French Resistance in World War II, I read a great book of how they would recruit young people. And if you were 30, you were not allowed in the French Resistance. If you were 30 or older, because you end up loving life. If you live that long, you end up loving life. And you can't be trusted anymore, because if you're going to be loving life, you cannot be held responsible for other people, because you just might give up the secret in order to stay alive.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that's great. What book was that from?
That was that Jacques Lucerne book, And There Was Light.
We read that in 8th grade. They had us read that book, and I remember very specifically, we hated it.
Oh my.
Oh, we hated it so much. We just trashed it. I bet I would love that book now.
Oh my God, it's a book. It's a real book.
It seems to me that's like anything that I was vehemently opposed to in 8th grade is probably one of my favorite things now.
That's the real downfall of education. All these amazing works of literature you'd never look at again, because I hate
it. It was ruined for you in school, because somebody said, "You have to read it."
That's
right. You have to. It became an obligation immediately.
Anyway, you've made it through. I think maybe you're starting to love life so much.
I really am. I was checking in with a therapist and a counselor the other day. Something we both like to do to sort of keep ourselves honest.
Good.
And asking ourselves questions. But I was saying my biggest problem these days seems to be this fear that everything is so suspiciously good right now, like it's going so well, that I'm just sitting around waiting for the other, you know, foot the drum. It's just it can't possibly be this good, right? This is way too great.
Wow.
So, but at the same time, that's sort of like, you know, an immediate challenge to just sort of re-up on my courage and say, you know what, that's okay.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah.
It is great. It's wonderful. And if that's all it is for right now, if it ends now, then it does. And I've been lucky to at least see this much. It's been wonderful.
I think somehow when I was in college and I would be on the way to a boring class and I'd say, you know, if I would just go home and read my book, I would learn more than I would in my boring class.
Yeah.
So that would be my beginning. I would then say, okay, I'm skipping class. And then I would play Frisbee the whole hour. And so I wouldn't go home. Anyway, somehow I got this feeling of getting away with something. And it's been such a great feeling. Some people truly believe they must pay for every good thing, and even double. They must pay double for every good thing. So they hate good things. They just hate it because they're gonna, now they have to pay.
They're immediately in debt. They put themselves in debt.
Horrible. And nobody knows what the thing is here. Nobody knows. So you can create any picture you want.
Yeah, why not? Believe the best thing. Believe that you deserve it.
Anyway,
why not?
Anyway, so life can, I think, be good for you. It may not be good for everybody, but it certainly can be good for you. So
I think so, too. And I think it's more about, what Sophia and I keep talking about is, it seems to be the more you are open to that possibility, open to, you know, always leaving a little bit of room to be surprised by a person or a situation.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you never know. It could be
nice.
Wonderful.
Nice.
It could be wonderful. So why not?
That's a good thought. It could be wonderful.
Yes, yes, yes. Thank you again, Nathan. And thank you all for listening. If you have comments or suggestions, leave me a note at my website, reasoningwithanoptimist.net, and try to listen again next week. This is Jack Brissett-Mills. Bye-bye.